Mini episode 518 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs, consulting, and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the FDH Lounge annual NASCAR season preview slash fantasy mock draft. You have with you FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Mike Petak. Mike, of course, also our FDH Motorsports editor. Here to break it down for us today, we have a mock draft that we conducted with FDH in the last couple of days. And Mike will be giving the breakdown on the FantasyDraftHelp.com 2015 mock draft that we did for NASCAR, giving us thoughts on the season here at Mike's abode. It's a pleasure to get together with him in person and see my good friend Mike Petak. How are you today, big fella?
I am freezing my butt off out there, Ricky. Yes. I am so over winter. It's February. That means you're just one day closer to Daytona 500.
Yes, you are. We are not far from that point as we are conducting this here today. And before we get into the particulars of the mock draft, how it broke down, and getting more expert analysis on all of this, want to get your thoughts on 2014, the first year of the new Chase system. You start with 16 drivers in the Chase and then piecemeal eliminations all the way to the end. The consensus seems to be it led to a better final race where you had the handful of drivers who were going to be in it, and of course subsequently with Kevin Harvick winning the race outright as well as being the lead among the couple of guys that was involved in it in the Chase at the very end. So kind of a double whammy there as far as excitement goes. But overall, what did you think about it? It was definitely a departure from even the past couple of years with the Chase where they'd continue to make some adjustments.
Yeah, definite departure on how it used to be. But I enjoyed it. I liked the way they broke it down. I think instead of having just two people in the final Chase, that they should have like four, and that way I think it would give you a little more action. But with the Chase, the way it's set up, you either love it or you hate it. There's no real middle ground.
Absolutely. And it seems like it's getting to be like other sports. Baseball, it seems like, you know, we saw it with Kansas City and San Francisco. Just get into October and then figure out a way. It seems like NASCAR is sort of on the same path now. And again, I understand that's been the case ever since they've had the Chase. You know, you could win five races by the time July's done, and it doesn't guarantee you anything. But it almost seems like it's more compressed into, all right, let's just make it to September, and then when we do, that's when the real action starts.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, they had the win, and you're pretty much guaranteed that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, it put a lot more emphasis on winning a race, not just, okay, I'm just going to cruise along and finish in the top 10 and just try to keep on padding my points. You know, they really made an emphasis on making sure that, you know, you knew how important winning was.
Absolutely. It was very instrumental in that. And again, as we head into 2015, is there anything that you're looking at as far as rules, as far as anything with the cars, anything like that that figures to be any kind of a big departure from what we've seen in past years, in your opinion?
No, I'm just looking forward to another year of, you know, just, you know, some really, really good hard racing.
Definitely should be that, and that's what all the participants, of course, in our mock draft that we conducted online the other night, that's what everybody's looking forward to. To give you the order, 1 through 6 here, all FDH Lounge dignitaries and some other duties for some of the individuals involved. In the number one spot, drawing the top pick, FDH Lounge dignitary Jeff Maslanich. In the second spot, you, Mike Petak, our FDH Motorsports editor. Drafting third, Jason Jones, FDH senior editor. In the fourth spot, FDH original dignitary Chris Galloway. I, Rick Morris, FDH Lounge original dignitary as well in the fifth spot. And Samantha Jones is picking sixth, our FDH entertainment editor, and another of our FDH original dignitaries, and along with Jason. So we got four of us actually together for this thing here, and you and Jeff, of course, rounding out the other spots. Picking second, I know, is something that you were conflicted about when I initially texted you to let you know that and alert you that that was coming.
Yes, I believe my first words were trade down.
A little bit different from, spoiler alert, our FDH baseball mock draft that we did, our fantasy baseball mock draft for this year. When I texted you, you couldn't wait 3 seconds before applying Mike Trout.
Well,
little different story there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there you want to be at the top.
So, yeah, Mike Trout. You know, of course, this year now that he's on my team, you know, hamstring. You know, name that injury, oblique,
yeah.
High ankle sprain.
Bound to go badly, although I hope not for your sake. And if I'm able to get him in my non-keeper league this year, I'll certainly be hoping for that. But, yeah, it's a little bit different in NASCAR this year because, again, the first pick that we had, it was taken by FDH Lounge dignitary Jeff Maslanich, a chalk pick on most people's boards. Jimmy Johnson, as you will see from our draft board that you can find at the FantasyDraftHelp.com guide, Fantasy NASCAR Draftology 2015, you have the UQB that we calculate every year for how drivers did on the different track types. And for Jimmy Johnson, kind of a lackluster year. Again, he placed 11th overall in the standings, 13th on the UQB because on the track types, his best finish was 10th on the intermediate tracks, and of course that accounts for 2/3 of them out there, which was so that was pretty good for him. Not in the top 20 on restrictor plate courses, 13th on the short tracks, 20th on the super speedways, 13th on the road courses. We're all expecting a much better year from Jimmy Johnson this year, and I know Jeff's got to be counting on it, taking him in the lead spot.
Again, I mean, you just based on history with him and Chad Knaus working together, you know, so many championships, so many wins, so many visits to victory lane. You know, yeah, he had a bad year last year, but really, how can you not take him number one?
Right.
And it's just based on – it's all based on history. Throw last year out the window, and, you know, if I had the first pick, yeah, I would take Jimmy Johnson, absolutely.
And it's very interesting because you had the second pick, and it was really a grab bag of some guys that you could go after in that spot. You ended up selecting Joey Logano, who finished – he's had a nice progression the last couple of years, 17th in the standings in 2012 – 8th in 2013, 4th place last year, really in it right up until about the end. He was 7th on the intermediate tracks, which is very important. Number 1 on the short tracks last year. That's important as well if you can be first or second in any of the specific categories there. So Joey Logano, maybe the fastest up-and-coming young guy in NASCAR, and I know that must be your calculation.
That was exactly the way I looked at things. You know, a few years ago, it was Team Hendrick, and everybody else was looking up at him.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems like, you know, the Penske's have really closed the door on that, and they're just inching a little closer. Yeah, they do have a championship that Keselowski won a couple years ago, and I think they got a great team with Logano and Keselowski. It's a great 1-2 punch.
Right. No question about that. And it sets up Logano for a potentially great boost in 2015 if he's able to take that next step and finish as champion. In the third spot, Jason Jones going with a gentleman who was champion in 2012, the aforementioned Brad Keselowski. He bounced back. It was a donut hole kind of a deal for him the last 3 years, 14th place in 2013, following up on the championship, 5th place last year. He led our UQB standings last year, despite only finishing 5th overall, because he was pretty solid across the board. Was not in the top 20 on road courses, but that's only 2 races. 6th on super speedways, 10th on short tracks, 2nd on restrictor plate courses, and 2nd on the ever-important intermediate tracks. Brad Keselowski's a guy who can perform for you on just about any type of racetrack, and that's very important.
Absolutely. And he can take a punch, too, apparently.
Yes, he can.
He's one to stir the pot. And,
yes.
And, you know, they always say, you know, they're going to, you know, handle things on the track. Well, apparently, they, you know, a couple people were handling it off the track as well with Brad Keselowski.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have a short memory. But, you know, a lot of people are going to remember the kind of raciness that Keselowski has. And it's going to be difficult to find people that, in my opinion, that are going to want to work with him. And that's why I actually didn't take him at number 2.
Very interesting. Okay. That's a great rationale if you're going to have one there, because that is something, the human part of it does come into NASCAR, Mike, as it does any other endeavor.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Matt Kenseth is the most laid-back individual you would ever want to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And to see some of the reaction that he had,
mm-hmm.
it's just unbelievable.
Yes, definitely.
And like I says, I think, yeah, he'll find people in the Penske camp that'll work with him. The Ford people in the Ford camp, they're going to work with him on race day.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, other than that, he's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and I think it's going to show up on the track. And, you know, he's a very talented driver, and, you know, that's why he's taking number three. And you could justify him being taken two, even one, based mm-hmm. on last year's ratings.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see what happens, how, you know, he's able to work with other drivers.
I would have taken him at five, notwithstanding these issues, but there's no way he was going to drop there. I also would have taken the guy at four ahead of the guy that I ended up with, but Chris Galloway, with the fourth pick, ends up selecting Kevin Harvick, one of the few guys out there who was in the chase the last 3 years, eighth in 2012, and he was subsequently third in 2013 and the champion last year. We talked about Joey Logano before making progression. That's the kind of progression he wants to make. He'd like to replicate and keep going in the right direction the way that Kevin Harvick did. At this point, there's no room to move up any further, but there is room to stay at the top. He was fifth in UQB last year because he was in the top 20 on all the track types, and highlighted, of course, by finishing third on the very important intermediate tracks last year. Kevin Harvick, a guy who can perform on any different types of tracks, like we said with Brad Keselowski, he had just a little bit more when it counted at the end last year. And as you said to me off air, it will be very fascinating to watch him try to chase two in a row.
Yeah, it is so difficult. You can could insert any sport right here,
mm-hmm.
and to try to repeat is the most difficult thing to do in sports.
Right.
Win the first one, that's impressive. Win the second one, win two in a row, that's quite a feat. And, you know, again, Harvick could have been taken one, two, or three, and nobody would bat an eye. He
right.
had great numbers last year. They do call him the closer for a reason, because those last 10 laps, you know, he finds a way to move up a spot or two. And if he's got to race you hard, he will. He'll race you hard and clean. And, you know, Kevin Harvick, you know, great pick at number four.
Yeah, I thought so. And I was resigned to him not getting through to me at number five, but it didn't ease the pain anymore. On the FDH draft board, of course, there are five drivers at the top, but I definitely wanted the first four more than the guy I ended up with. We'll see how it goes, because it could go in a really good direction here, in a motivated direction. It could go poorly. Jeff Gordon, the pick for me, with the fifth pick overall. He was fourth in the UQB last year. He was sixth in the overall standings, sixth in 2013, 10th in 2012. So another one of these guys has been in the chase each of the last 3 years. But past that dominant run that he had in the late 90s has really not been a super big factor at the top. He was first on the intermediate tracks last year and second on the short tracks. So that definitely is helpful. One of the most talented drivers. There's been question about whether, again, he's been surpassed by the next generation, because he has not won a championship at any time recently in his career. Although, again, one of the most decorated drivers of all time, a multi-time champion. Certainly for somebody like me at number five, I'm taking him, hoping for the best and hoping that at least he can finish near the top in his final campaign.
Yeah, that was rather shocking. Jeff Gordon, only 42, 43 years old, something like that. And he's, you know, going to call it quits as a full-time driver. And, you know, Chase Elliott, I guess, is going to fill his shoes
mm-hmm.
in the number 24 car.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of weight on Chase Elliott next year. But, you know, Jeff Gordon, you know, had a really solid season last year. You know, there are a couple races that he could have won, and, you know, he even admits that he should have won.
Mm-hmm.
But he made some mistakes on the track, and so be it. But he was in the chase, and he was competitive every week.
Right. And that's the kind of thing that, again, I in that spot, I'm going to be hoping for the same level of competitiveness this year, no question about it. Samantha Jones with the sixth pick in our standard Serpentine draft, so that puts her on the clock for the next two. The pick that she made in that spot was Dale Earnhardt Jr., which would have been the default pick, I think, for a lot of people at number six. He finished eighth in the standings last year, but second in our UQB rankings. Another one of these drivers that was pretty sterling across all track types. Fourth in the very important intermediate tracks, but seventh in restrictor plate racing. You expect that from him. Seventh on the short tracks, ditto. 13th on the super speedways, second on the road courses, and that's part of his game that he has really stepped up over the years. Earnhardt's another one of these guys that's a threat on any different type of track that he's on. Never been able to close and get the thing done and win even that first chase, but this is a guy who, again, for a couple of years there, had the monkey on his back of not winning the Daytona 500 and has now taken care of that twice. So there's reason to think that he may still, especially with Hendrick behind him, possibly have what it takes to get at least one of these suckers before the end of his career.
Me being a complete Earnhardt mark, starting with his father, mm-hmm. Yeah, I would hope so.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, his biggest weakness for years was the intermediate tracks, mm-hmm. and he was having problems, and he really stepped up his game. And he had an outstanding year last year. But now take all that good that you're taking with Dale Earnhardt, and he's losing his crew chief.
Right.
So you lose your crew chief, and you got to hope that you can have the same sort of connection with your new crew chief as he did with his old one, where, you know, they were winning races. They were competitive every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he won the Daytona 500. You know, he was on quite a roll, and to lose – you know, your crew chief, and then just it's almost like starting over again to a certain degree.
Right. It makes it very difficult. That's going to be a tremendous challenge for him this year. With the second pick that Samantha makes here back-to-back, it is the first pick of the second round. Her selection is Carl Edwards, who finished ninth last year in the Chase standings, 13th in 2013. He was 15th the previous year, 2012, where he was not in the Chase standings. He did not make the cut for it. Kind of a lackluster year for him, topped off by being first on the road tracks cumulatively here, but that only accounts for two races. 12th on the intermediate courses, not really doing a whole lot on the other track types as well. So for Carl Edwards, a guy who a couple of years ago it was a hot pick to win the Chase, now dropping to the second round, and I think deservedly so. What's been the story with him the last few years?
You know, you look at the whole Roush Fenway team that he was on, and it's sort of – it was the top Ford team, which now has been, you know, supplanted by Penske.
Mm-hmm.
And right now Ford Motor wanted, you know, Carl Edwards to be the face of Ford Motor Racing.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to take up and go to Toyota with Joe Gibbs Racing, mm-hmm. was a shock to everybody. I thought he would maybe go to Penske or another Ford team, because I know Ford really wanted him, and it was really important to them.
Right.
And he went with his good friend Matt Kenseth, and now he's making up a very strong Joe Gibbs Racing team.
Yeah. That is a very formidable combination. And, again, yeah, the move to Toyota, I'm sure he would have liked to have seen better results from it than we've been able to get thus far. Up next is the second pick in the second round, and Matt Kenseth is the selection for yours truly. And another one of these guys, again, the last couple of years, he's been in the Chase every year. Seventh in 2012 and 2014. He was the runner-up in 2013. On our UQB last year, he placed seventh as well, a guy who was pretty solid across the track types, was top 10 in all of the track types except for the two road courses. So that kind of consistency, and more than most drivers, when you think Matt Kenseth, you think consistency. That's what I'm looking for at the top of the second round, pretty much.
That's a great call on by you, Rick, Mr. Consistency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really does not have one glaring weakness. I mean, yeah, there's two road courses, and you get a lot of the specialty guys, and some of those guys will show up later on in the draft.
Yep.
But he really does. He's just very consistent. And, you know, again, if I were to tell you, Rick, Matt Kenseth, he's going to win the championship this year.
Mm-hmm.
Are you shocked?
No, I wouldn't be.
No, not at all. And in the second round, that is tremendous value.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I was looking for in that spot there.
I was hoping to get him where I was at, to be honest with you.
Guy that can deliver. Yeah, you were a few spots away. He didn't quite make it through there. But once he went, and again, we're still talking about our second tier of drivers on our FDH draft board, but it starts to go in a little bit more of an experimental direction from there, as you can see with the pick that went right after me. Chris Galloway with the third pick of the second round. He ends up on Kyle Larson, who last year had a tremendous campaign as a rookie, albeit 17th place, just missing the chase. He was ninth in the UQB, and somebody that did pretty well across the track types. Had top 20 finishes on restrictor plate, short tracks, and road courses, as well as being sixth on the intermediate. So he's already got the most important one down, which accounts for two-thirds of the track type races out there. He's already got that down pretty well. A fast learner, a guy who a lot of people are pegging to make a good run into the chase this year, and clearly Chris Galloway is one of those people, taking him with the third pick in the second round.
Absolutely. You know, you were on Kyle Larson last year from the get-go.
Yeah.
I will give you mad props for that.
Mm-hmm.
You were all over him.
Yep.
And I liked him, but obviously not as much as you. And, you know, he proved me wrong. Solid driver. You know, once you start as a rookie, when you got that little yellow stripe on your bumper, not too many people want to work with you.
Right.
But as the season progressed, more people were working and not afraid to race Kyle Larson. So that tells you a lot about the young man.
Right. That is definitely the kind of progression through the course of the season that he needed, and the kind of progression I'm sure that he'll be looking for in year two. And if he continues to go in that direction, that is going to prove to be a very good value pick for Chris Galloway right there. Up next, fourth pick of the second round, Jason Jones selects Ryan Newman, a guy who finished second last year. Pretty good comeback from the previous 2 years, because in 2014 he finished 14th place, just missed the chase. It was in 11th place in 2013, so he made the chase, but just barely, sort of. But last year, third on the UQB, which, as you would expect, would indicate pretty solid across the track types. Not top 20 in road courses, but 11th on the super speedways, third on the short tracks, eighth on the restrictor tracks, fourth on the intermediate track races. Ryan Newman pretty much across the way, at least on 34 of the 36 races not contested on road tracks, was as solid as you could look for. A lot of people are leery of what has been a demonstrable, if unscientific, jinx the last couple of years for just missing out on winning the chase. But based on the kind of year that he had, you'd have to think he could be a guy that could buck that.
You would think so. He's got a great team behind him, but that's why I was actually kind of glad, Mr. Superstitious over here, that he was off the board when he got to me.
Uh-huh.
When my pick was coming up, I'm like, oh, God, here comes Ryan Newman. Oh, man. Oh, not number two. Come on. Come on, Jason, you can do this. Help a brother out. And Ryan Newman, he's got a lead foot, especially when it comes to qualifying. He is always known for his qualifying speed. And with the new I like the way the new qualifying set up. It wasn't just like two laps, and, you know, the way they had everything up. And everybody worked out a little different strategy when it came to the qualifying last year.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still Ryan Newman. He's got a lead foot, and on those qualifying runs, he's can still get you a pole at any given Saturday or Sunday.
Exactly. And, again, that's the foundation of a great weekend, is starting off strong there, getting in a good position right at the gate. Of course, with him being off the board, second to last pick of the second round, that deposited Denny Hamlin right in your lap. Third place finisher a year ago. Real donut hole the last 3 years here. 23rd place in 2013, but 6th place in 2012. 8th place on the UQBs last year, and again, first on the super speedways, third on the restrictor plate tracks, 9th on the intermediate tracks. Denny Hamlin with a good bounce back year last year, in it right until the end, and that was because, again, across a lot of different track types, he was really getting it done.
Yeah, another consistent. You look at the team Gibbs has put together, which is almost your entire second round.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Edwards, Matt Kenseth, Denny Hamlin, and Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
That's a very strong team right there.
Yes.
And that's, any given Sunday, any one of those four guys can win a race.
Exactly. A lot of talent in there, definitely. And you mentioned Kyle Busch, and that is, of course, because he went with the last pick of the second round to Jeff Maslanich, who scoops him right up. Kyle Busch, a guy perennially expected to contend for titles. The only time in the last 3 years that he made a real strong run was a fourth place finish in 2013. He was, however, in the chase last year, 10th place. He was 13th place in 2012, which at the time was not enough to get you in the chase. Only 17th on the UQB last year. And, again, he wasn't top 20 in the super speedway and road courses. He was 18th on the short tracks, 13th on the restrictor plates, 13th on the intermediate courses. So he was sort of uniformly mediocre to bad across a number of track types. Like Jimmy Johnson, that's probably not something you expect for this year. Jeff's got two real bounce-back candidates, two huge ones with JJ and Busch first and second rounds.
Yeah, I mean, but that's still a great start to any team when you can start with Kyle Busch and, or Jimmy Johnson and Kyle Busch. But, yeah, you really got to kind of hope for that big bounce-back year from Kyle Busch. And, again, you know, he's shown a lot more maturity on the track, and he does a lot of racing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, let's face it, he's racing trucks. He's a truck owner.
Mm-hmm.
He's racing in the Xfinity Series, you know, formerly known as the Nationwide Series. He's racing on Sunday during the Sprint Cup, and that has to take a little bit of wear and tear on the body, and it wouldn't surprise me if you maybe see him slow down a little bit, and if he slows down a little bit, maybe that will give him the motivation, and he'll go a little farther in the Sprint Cup championship.
Maybe so, yeah. Yeah, he may have to prioritize at a certain point in time. In fact, as he ages, it's almost certain that I think he will have to consider that. As we start the third round, Casey Kane is Jeff's second pick here back-to-back. As we end the second, start the third round, Casey Kane 15th last year, 12th in 2013, and 4th in 2012. And, again, another guy who has been in the chase the last 3 years, albeit he was in the chase last year with the expanded format, making it at 15th place. The opposite of what we're talking about with some of these other guys with the progression they've been making, Joey Logano with the progression that he made, Kevin Harvick. Casey Kane has not been going in the right direction the last couple of years in terms of where he's placed in the standings. He didn't really do that great in terms of any of the track types last year. Aside from the two road courses, okay, he was fifth in those, but he was not top 10 in any of the other track types. What do you look for Casey Kane to do in 2015? Because this is yet another kind of comparatively buy low one. Jeff's got three guys in a row in the first three rounds where he's getting them at a little bit of a lower ebb in 2014 from what we'd have expected.
Yeah, Casey Kane, he's been when he first came up, he was the guy. He was one of the guys with Ray Evernham Racing,
mm-hmm.
and you always waited for him to peak, mm-hmm. and it was going to happen. It was going to happen, and it never really did. And, you know, when you're on Team Hendrick and you're not winning and you're not placing it in the top tens, you know, he's not going to stand for that. And
right.
I think there's a lot of pressure on Casey Kane this year to come up big. And I hope he can, really just a super guy because, you know, next year Hendrick's losing Jeff Gordon as a full-time driver. So that's a huge loss.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bringing in Chase Elliott, as I said, to fill that gap. So there's Chase Elliott. They could easily get rid of Casey Kane. And if there's a free agent driver that is a big deal out there, you know Hendrick's going to throw a boatload of cash at him to get him to come over.
That's true. I mean, and if he doesn't get it done this year, not to lump the pressure on even more, but one of my favorite all-time sayings about the country of Brazil, it's always said, it's the country of the future and it always will be. Is that what Casey Kane risks being known for if he doesn't really get it done and make a move in 2015?
I think so.
I think so,
because then you'll start seeing him. You know, I don't want to say some of the lower grade teams,
mm-hmm.
but he'll be like a number one guy on some of the lower grade, the one or two car teams that you don't hear that much about. He won't be on the big two or three teams, mm-hmm. four teams,
yeah.
you know, that NASCAR has.
Yeah, well, you know, the road to Dave Blaineyville is that way, young fella, so we'll see if he can stay off it for another year.
Bringing the Buckeye Bullet into it, wow. Sandusky is that way that you pointed, by the way.
Yes, it is. I just as a fluke, I got that direction right as I was throwing my arm up. Next up, a real boom or bust pick here for you in the third round, a pick with some real upside, Mike Petak, but depending on where his head's at, some real risk as well. Tony Stewart, we all know what happened to him last year. Still, with everything that had happened, still 25th place last year, still four spots better than his previous year, 29th. Place at 2013, that really kind of puts that puts it into perspective. When the next year you can manage to feel better even when somebody has died at the hands of your automobile. You've really had a low 2013 when that happens. Ninth place in 2012. Not much to be said about last year. We all know how that went down. And again, a lot of upside still based on the amount of talent that he has with a fairly recent championship behind him. What do you look for from this multi-time Sprint Cup champion?
This was like the scariest pick. Because, yeah, what happened last year, I don't care what profession you're in. If you're, you know, if you're a race car driver and or you're a pharmacist or a pharmacy technician or whatever, and you take somebody's life away from them, that has just got to weigh on your head so heavily. And I don't care how who you are or how strong you are, no matter what, you're going to pull back just a little bit. And I hope, you know, Tony Stewart is strong and he's able to race and be the Tony Stewart of old. But, it you know, it's a risky pick. But in the third round, you know, there's value there.
Well, as you're going to see from the next couple of picks that went. And, you know, shout out to, as you said, all the great pharmacy techs out there. I wonder why that came to mind as an example.
Well, you know. It's what I do.
You go with what you know, I suppose.
There you go.
But up next, Kurt Busch goes to Jason Jones. And, again, you know, you talk about in the third round, boom or bust picks here. I don't know that we've ever done a draft with two bigger boom or bust picks back-to-back. At least Tony Stewart is not laying down allegations about an ex-girlfriend being a big-time assassin.
You see, you took my thunder away from me. You took my crack.
Great minds think alike. That's all we can say. I didn't know you were going to say that, but I should have known you. Ignorance is not a defense. 12th place last year, 10th place in 2013, 25th place the year before that. Things has not been going well for him. 7th place last year on the Super Speedways for what that's worth, and 3rd on the road courses. But that's about all to be said for the state of Kurt Busch's racing right about now.
First year with Stuart Haas Racing, he had some really good races, and he had some really good moments, and he had some real head scratchers as well. He's another one like his brother. You know, he will let the temper get the best of him, and you know, I think working with the people at Stuart Haas Racing, okay, this is going to be a second year with them. It wouldn't surprise me if you saw a much improved Kurt Busch.
I think that's what a lot of people are counting on this year. And, again, another guy that we're not used to seeing get picked in the third round. That's sort of been the theme of the third round here, as Chris Galloway is able to reel in Clint Bowyer, who last year went 19th place, a kind of shocking departure from what we'd seen previously. 7th in 2013, 2nd place in 2012. Another one of these guys making a progression, but in exactly the wrong direction. He was 12th on the UQB last year, which would point to maybe his luck being a little bit kind of bad, but wasn't really a standout on any of the track types except for 4th place on the 6 restrictor plate course races and 5th place on the 4 super speedways. So On 10 of the tracks out there of the 36, he was likely to go out and put up a pretty good finish. He was top 20 on all of them. So, again, 12th on the UQB, 19th in terms of where he finished. Maybe his luck wasn't that great, but what were some of the other things that helped to put him in the third round for this year?
You look at the depth. I think there's a lot of depth and a lot of, you look at, a lot of the teams and, when I was looking at Tony Stewart, I was also looking at Clint Bowyer. I mean, there's 6 of 1 and a half dozen another, you know, minus the championships that Stewart has. But, Clint Bowyer, good racer. And I can't tell you why he slipped this far, because, if you would have told me he would have went to Chris Galloway in the second round instead of Kyle Larson, I couldn't argue with that pick at all.
Right.
He was very consistent. He went from being a top 15 to a top 20. So let's hope he's not going from a 20 to a 25 now. If you're Chris Galloway,
you got to think that the odds of that are probably pretty good that he could end up rallying this year. Because as you said, there's no single thing that you can kind of point to along those lines. So up next for me, Jamie McMurray, and similar to before, where Galloway snaked me with Kevin Harvick, this time he knocks me down a tier with the previous pick. Or I'm sorry, the Kurt Busch one is the one that did, actually, when Jason did, because Kurt Busch was the last one on that tier. So, again, McMurray, I can live with that okay. I mean, he was 18th place last year, 15th the year before, 20th in 2012. So, I mean, for where I'm picking, it's not great value. It's not horrible value. He was 5th on the road tracks last year. He was 11th on the intermediate courses, which, as we've said, are pretty important. He was tied for 14th on the UQB, so the UQB yoked pretty close to where he finished in the standings, if not a little bit ahead of where he finished finished in the standings. So for me as a Jamie McMurray owner in 2015, what am I looking for, Mike?
You know, Jamie McMurray, you know, he has a good team, and on some of the super speedways and some of the restrictor plates, racetracks, he has in the past really shined on some of those. He's finished strong at Talladega. I know he really, a few years ago, you know, You could very easily get a couple of wins out of him.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, as far as consistency goes, that's where I'm not feeling it with him.
Right. Well, and that's kind of sort of been his story, hasn't it been? But, you know, you've been able to get some moments of glory from him the last couple of years, but looking for it on a regular basis, that seems to be the bugaboo, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's that basically made him, as we look at it here, well, the second last of the guys that were in rated in the top third round of our racers. We'll be coming back to that in a moment here, because for Samantha Jones at the end of the third round, beginning of the fourth round, she took two guys who were not rated as even third round racers. A little bit of a gamble on her part with each of these two guys, but young guys with upside, you got to give it to her for that. The first of the two picks was Austin Dillon, who finished 20th last year. And, again, number one on the restrictor plate courses, number three on the super speedways, and 18th on the intermediate courses. So he had a pretty decent footing there. Tied for 14th on the UQB with Jamie McMurray. So Austin Dillon, definitely a young guy with some upside. You got to say that.
Absolutely. Second year, he'll hopefully. And I don't care what anybody says. When you're coming into racing and you're going into the sprint Sprint Cup, and you're going to put that number three on the side of your car,
right?
That's a lot of pressure. I don't care what anybody says. You can get all the blessings from the Earnhardts that you want. The fans put a lot of pressure on him for having that number three on the side of the car. So hopefully this year things are a little looser, and you get a little better performance out of him.
Yeah, there is every reason to think so. A very, very talented young guy. The Rookie of the Year from the previous season is her next pick. Samantha's pick to start the fourth round, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., a.k.a. Mr. Danica.
And Team Stanica.
Team Stanica, yeah. 27th last year after being 19th in his rookie season. So a fall-off from the rookie year. Only 9 points last year on the UQB, not in the top 20, and that is indicative of the fact that he wasn't really that good on any track types. In the top 20, 20th exactly on the restrictor plate courses, and 14th on the super speedways. Definite regression for Ricky Stenhouse in 2014, but a lot of talent there. So it could be a buy-low possibility here at this point for her, because with a better 2014, he surely would have gone higher in the third round. What are you looking for from Stenhouse in 2015, Mike?
Yeah, Stenhouse, it was an interesting pick. And if you'll notice, you know, Team Roush Fenway went from one of the elite teams mm-hmm. to where you're starting to see them, you know, more sprinkled through the mid to lower part of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see if it's – I've always said, is it the driver or is it the team? And this is going to be another one of those instances, is it the driver or the team? Because Roush Fenway went from being an elite team, one of the top two, three teams with Hendrick and Gibbs – you know, just 2-3 years ago to now, where you're seeing a lot of their guys, like I said, sprinkled out in the second and third round, and they're not one of that elite team anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's true. A driver with a lot of talent, and we'll see if the atmosphere around him and the way that it's been kind of falling off a little bit will continue to stand in his way.
But the next guy who picked next was absolutely a genius pick in my opinion.
I thought so as well, and that is, coincidentally.
Yes.
Coincidentally, yours truly with the second pick of the fourth round. Greg Biffle is my selection. He finished 14th last year, 9th in 2013, 5th in 2012, so a top 15 selection. And in the standings the last 3 years is how I would spin it. He was tied for 10th on the UQB last year, so he was in the top 10 of all track types except for intermediate, where he placed 16th. So pretty solid, pretty steady across the track types a year ago. The kind of consistency that, again, if he can have another year like that, I think he'll be a steal for me in this round, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at your team, I mean, right now, Jeff Gordon, Matt Kenseth, Jamie McMurray, and Greg Biffle.
Mm-hmm.
Solid, 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 and solid. And Biffle's going to be the number one guy right now, I believe, at Roush Fenway. And, he seems like he's, of all their drivers, he's the one who stands out that can be the most consistent.
Right.
So he may be the one to get you, the top tens, the top fives. And, hopefully for you, he gets you that win or something that can get him into the chase. Because if I told you in the fourth round you're gonna get Greg Biffle and he's gonna be in the chase again, nobody would be that surprised.
No, nobody would be surprised at all. And here's the funny thing: again, I do these drafts as most of us just do in terms of we look at it like, who do we think is the best one available for me? Again, as the guy who has final say over the FantasyDraftHelp.com board, I'm a slave to the board, because why would I go against what I have finalized? So I didn't look at this when I was making my picks, but I look at this, and I go back to a couple of years ago, probably the fantasy championship that I won in any sport that means the most to me because of how difficult it was, 20-team baseball keeper league. And I had on that team, there's a concept that I came up with a couple of years ago called the offset twins. I had James Loney at first base, and I had Mark Reynolds at third base. And between the both of them, they had above average power and batting average. Individually, the pieces, that would be pretty ugly based on if you just had one of them. You would have Mark Reynolds killing you in terms of batting average. You would have James Loney killing you in terms of home run production.
But the Dolans thinks that would be a brilliant idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they would love to go in that direction. I'm looking at this here. Matt Kenseth, Jamie McMurray. Boy, between the two of them, I have above average winning capability and consistency, don't I?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a very solid team you got there.
Very, very savvy.
That's why I wanted to trade down.
I wish I could say that's how it was planned, but that's just how she goes, as one of the guys from Trailer Park Boys like to say. Up with the third pick in the fourth round, Chris Galloway takes Martin Truex Jr. Another one of these guys, kind of like Casey Kane, that you would have expected him to be a little bit further along, I think, from where he was. Going back even as recently as 2012 when he made the chase and was in 11th place, 2013, 16th place, 2014, 24th place. And again, not so great on the UQB last year, aside from 10th on the two road track races, whoop-dee, and 19th on restrictor plate and 20th on intermediate course races. Truex Jr., it must be asked, is this basically what he is at this point? Is there hope for him becoming more than what he is?
He's racing for a one-car team right now, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's really, really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, at least they're forwarding all their money towards that one driver.
Yes.
So he's won at every level except for the big level. So, yeah, the potential's there. Now, can he just execute it?
Right.
Because, when he was coming up from the Nationwide Series, he was a very hot item, and a lot of teams wanted to sign him.
Yes.
He has not lived up to expectations.
Right.
But at once he did have expectations, and I think, you could see a solid season out of Martin Truex.
I know that's what Chris is going to be counting on, and Jason, with the fourth pick of the fourth round, ends up with Paul Menard, who has been kind of steady right about this part of the finishes the last couple of years, 12th place in 2012, 17th in 2013, 21st last year. A little bit of a fall off for him, but he was 18th on the UQB, so it was a little bit kinder to him because of that, because, he didn't finish really high on any of the ones here. As a matter of fact, he was between 10 and 20 on all of their different track types last year on average finish. So you talk about consistency, and it's not the consistency that we see from a Kevin Harvick or somebody like that, but it's a different kind of consistency. The guy's not higher than 10th. The guy's not lower than 20th on any track type from the 2014 season.
Incredibly mediocre is what you're trying to tell me.
That's not a very nice spin on it, but okay.
Well, we didn't draft him, so yeah. I can go there.
Not our problem.
Yeah. But, you know, he's really the third car in that team, you know. You know they're going to put all their money and spin towards Austin Dillon because that's Childress's grandson.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Menard, you know, Ryan Newman came in second last year, so, you know, he's going to get some push.
Right.
And Paul Menard, and, you know, they're going to put a good team because that's what Richard Childress does. He puts quality people in there.
Right.
But there has always been this certain level of expectation of Paul Menard that he was going to, like, break through that glass ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But he never has.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, this is one of those, you know, I think it's going to be one of the last runs for him. I hate to compare him to, you know, I don't want to go old school, but, you know, he's still, actually, I look at him, he was drafted. He could be the next Casey Mears.
Okay. Yeah, could be. And in terms of glass ceiling, so you're saying that he's broken through that every bit as durably as good old Eddie Guerrero did back in the day, right?
Arriba raza.
I was going to go with the other guy that won at WrestleMania 20, but too soon.
No,
too soon.
It will always be too soon.
Yeah, it will never not be too soon for that. The penultimate selection of the fourth round, Mike, you ended up with A.J. Allmendinger, guy with a great open wheel background, and again, excellent strides last year. 13th place and making the new expanded chase. He was 35th in 2013, 32nd in 2012. He didn't place that well on the UQB, which is kind of telling, but he was 9th on the short tracks and 17th on the road tracks as far as where he was able to excel. I don't exactly know how placing outside the top 20 on the UQB adds up to a 13th place finish overall, but he made the most out of that kind of a season, and I know that's the kind of value you're looking for here.
Yeah, and I was rather surprised when you told me how well he did on the short tracks.
Yeah.
That was rather surprising to me.
Not normally the forte of a lot of these open wheel guys.
No, okay. Not at all. And, you know, I expected him, you know, to do his damage on the road courses.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things of that sort and all with Doherty Racing and all. So, no, I, you know, if I can get, you know, some solid finishes on the road tracks from Allmendinger to get me some points, maybe even, like I said, a win on one of those road tracks, that would be impressive. And like you said, he did surprisingly well on the short tracks. And, you know, you get a couple of places right there, that's just more points for me.
Right. There's no question about that. And as you said, always a threat on the road tracks. The last pick of the fourth round, Jeff Mislanich goes with Eric Almirola, and he was 16th place last year, which put him in the chase, 18th in 2013, 21st in 2012, and again, did not score great on the UQB last year, but was in the top 20 on every track type outside of the intermediate courses. However, the way that the UQB is weighted, because that is two-thirds of the track types out there, to say that you scored well on everything but the intermediate tracks is, I suppose, the same thing as saying the Browns had a great season in every way except for their quarterback production.
Oh, let's not even go there.
Yes.
I'm already dreading that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Almirola, I mean, he won a race, and that's why he was able to get into the chase.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, can he win another race this year? Absolutely. But, you know, now we're getting to the point of we're either looking at teams and what can you get from this, the teams, the team owners, or specialists.
Right.
And, you know, maybe there's somebody with some upside, you know, that you can get at this particular point. But, you know, you're kind of really grasping at straws and hoping for the best. Once you get to this point in the draft, where you're going to have to start following your board.
Yep. The fifth round is pretty much all the lottery scratch-off tickets here at this point, to be perfectly honest. and a pastime which tracks well with the general demographic, I believe. Would it be elitist of me to point that out?
Oh, no, not at all.
Everybody's probably nodding along. Absolutely. I love me some scratch-offs and some Pabst Blue Ribbon with my NASCAR. The fifth round kicks off with Jeff Maslanich's last pick, and it is Trevor Bayne, a former winner and one of the most shocking finishes ever of the the Daytona 500. My open wheel bias showing through there subliminally as I started to say Indianapolis 500. Former winner of the Daytona 500, and that is probably about 95%, I think, of what we have to recommend him as a driver.
Exactly. He's now one of the drivers on Roush Fenway. He won that when he was racing for the Wood Brothers in the famous number 21 car.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you have a chance to draft a guy that won the Daytona 500 that is young. He's not like a Terry Labonte who's going to come in and, you know, get in on the champion's provisional,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the last round. You know, why not?
Yeah, that was the way of thinking, I believe, from the way that Jeff expressed it to me. You had the second pick in the fifth round, Mike, and you climaxed your draft with Brian Vickers, who had a 35th place finish in 2012, was not in the top 40 in 2013, and had a 22nd place finish in 2014, and finished 19th on the UQB, so marginally better than what he did in the actual standings last year. He is somebody who did finish 5th on the restrictor plate tracks, 14th on the short tracks, 8th on the road tracks, and 4th on the super speedways. Again, not in the top 20 on the intermediates. So another one of these guys where it's like, oh, he did great on everything except the thing that constitutes 2/3 of the races.
Yeah.
So thoughts on Brian Vickers?
Yeah. You get flashes from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's just like for a half a race, you could see what this guy could actually be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wish I could say he was a former Daytona 500 winner.
Yeah,
but again, you know, occasionally you see flashes from this guy to show what this guy could be.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much what I based my pick on because I've seen flashes from this guy in the past.
Well, you know what? And AJ Allmendinger, I mean, you had some thoughts about him being strong a year ago, and he delivered on it. So it does kind of show you that can still happen, right?
Yeah, you can catch lightning.
You can, yeah. Even at this point, for Jason Jones and for the rest of us, still yet to come. I think the expectations are even more modest than that. Jason's selection is Marcus Ambrose, 18th place in 2012, 22nd in 2013, 23rd in 2014. And as far as it went, he was not top 20 on any of the different track types. Marcus Ambrose, if you look in the dictionary, if you look up the phrase, it is what it is, although I don't know if the dictionary has phrases. I'll get back to you on that. But if it did have phrases and it was in there, wouldn't his picture be next to it is what it is?
I believe so.
Okay.
you know, Jason probably just draft him because he likes his Tasmanian accent. I don't know.
Probably.
No, Marcus, you know, Marcus is a road course guy. That's when he got into NASCAR. They always expected him to do well in the road courses.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at his, you know, Xfinity Series wins, you know, they have come on the road course. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a spot where you're looking, okay, this guy may not give me, you know, a lot of high finishes, but I can get a win on a road course.
Yeah, and he could be that guy, definitely.
Yes.
Up next, Chris Galloway ends his draft with the selection of the aforementioned Casey Mears, who, again, the last couple of years have kind of been it is what it is, 29th place in 2012, 24th place in 2013, 26th place in 2014. In terms of top 20 finishes on different track types, it's interesting. He wasn't in the top 20 on the intermediates or the short tracks. He was top 10 on three of the other kinds, 10th exactly on the restrictor plate courses, 10th exactly on the road courses, 2nd on the super speedways. So Casey Mears is another one of these guys. He can deliver for you at least in the targeted races that you're expecting, it seems like.
Rick is an amazing driver. He was always one of my favorite. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Cause
oh, Casey?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the Rocket.
I liked him, too, because he beat all the foreigners back in the 80s.
Oh,
I hope that doesn't make me sound xenophobic.
Team Penske. Love the Rocket.
Yeah.
This is a guy who just never lived up to expectations of his uncle.
Uh-huh.
And that's what, you know, when you came into racing with that Mears name,
uh-huh.
you had a target on you.
Yeah.
And it would be impossible for him to live up to expectations. And like he says, you know, he's not going to hit you a home run, but he may hit you a couple of doubles.
Right. That's
how you can use a baseball analogy.
Right. And no question that that is what appears to be his ceiling right about now. Second last pick of the draft.
Now, to me, the hottest person in all of NASCAR.
Was the one making the pick.
And
Eirik Morris selected Danica Patrick for my team. And, again, the as is always the case in a spot like this, and I say a spot like this as though there's any number of them out there, she appears to be occupying about the only one I can think of as far as somebody who is dominated by, you know, the media stuff, the advertising, the off-the-track kind of stuff. She's kind of unique in that sense, and it's kind of hard to evaluate her as a driver. But again, the last 2 years have been kind of it is what it is territory. 27th place in 2013, 28th place in 2014, and again, 5 points on the UQB, but no finishes in the top 20 on any of the different track types. So it appears to be a situation when you're looking at it with her, you have to hope because of the open wheel background that she can do some things for you on the road tracks and maybe on some of the super speedways, even if it didn't manifest in a top 20 finish last year. So thoughts on Danica and what you can expect for her at this point?
Yeah, she's really hot.
Okay.
Is that it? No.
I should have been a little more specific.
Yeah, you should have. All right. Danica Patrick, when she has shined, and it's hard for me to say that she has shined, but when she has looked her best, it's been on the restrictor plates, and mm-hmm. it has been on the super speedways, where, you know, maybe she's led for a couple of laps like she did at the Daytona 500. And so you see that there is potential there, and Kevin Harvick and Tony Stewart have both said that she is a very good learner, and they're working with her. So you've seen – like flashes and spots where she's broken into the top 10
mm-hmm.
or she's led a couple of races and they've been on the super speedway or the restrictor plates. So, you know, would it surprise me if she won a race? Yeah, kind of. But at this point, you see flashes and, you know, when you're running up front in a super speedway or restrictor
mm-hmm.
place, you don't know what's going to happen in front of you. You can go from 10th to 1st at the bat of an eye.
You can.
And she's shown well in those races.
And that's what the fifth round is all about. You take the flashes where you can get them at this point. And, yeah, the fact that she has demonstrated the ability for that, that made her a much better pick to me than, quite frankly, the one that Samantha ended the draft with. A quintessential NASCAR draft, Mr. Irrelevant, David Ragan. 28th place in 2012, 28th place in 2013, 32nd place in 2014. And, again, if you're at the end of a draft, we go 30 deep in our draft the way that we went. You know he's got a chance, a decent chance. Two of the last 3 years, he cracked the top 30 for all that that's worth. But is there really much beyond that to be said for him at this point?
I mean, right now, I mean, he's racing for Earnhardt in the Xfinity Series.
Mm-hmm.
He does really well there.
Mm-hmm.
He wins races. He's a championship contender. But it just is never translated to the Sprint Cup. He replaced Dale Jarrett in the UPS car. Yates Racing, and that was his big spot,
right?
And it has never panned out from there.
Yeah, it's a shame the way that it's gone, because he at one point is a guy you expected more from, but it hasn't really panned out that way. That brings us again to the end of our draft. All the different teams we had here, Jeff Maslanich's team, he was picking first in our Serpentine 5-round draft. Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, Casey Kane, Eric Almirola, and Trevor Bayne. You, Mike Petak, with Joey Logano, Denny Hamlin, Tony Stewart, A.J. Allmendinger, and Brian Vickers. Jason Jones ended up with Brad Keselowski, Ryan Newman, Kurt Busch, Paul Menard, and Marcus Ambrose. Chris Galloway, his team is Kevin Harvick, Kyle Larson, Clint Bowyer, Martin Truex Jr., Casey Mears. Eirik Morris ended up with Jeff Gordon, Matt Kenseth, Jamie McMurray, Greg Biffle, and Danica Patrick. Samantha Jones, her team is Dale Earnhardt Jr., Carl Edwards, Austin Dillon, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and David Ragan. Concluding thoughts on the draft that we had from a couple days ago, Mike, and from our discussion here today.
You know, it's tight. I mean, every, you know, we all ended up with the first round grade in the first round because – just the way it is, because you could throw a blanket over about 7 to 10 of these guys, mm-hmm. and pull a name out, and they're going to win a championship, and you're not going to be surprised.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think any one of us really has a chance to win this. So I think it's what you do in the late rounds, which is going to decide who really wins this championship, because, you know, the first two rounds are basically locked in, and it's basically, oh, who do I like? Do I like this driver over this driver? So, you know, the mid to late rounds is where you hope to make hay.
Absolutely. There's a lot of parity at the different levels in NASCAR this year because, again, while 1 through 6 is automatically first-round value on our board, that we always do it additionally where there's drop-offs, and there was a drop-off from spots 5 to 6. So the first 5 drivers in particular seemed pretty close. Then from 6 down to 15 seemed like there wasn't a whole lot to separate them. From 16 to 21, from 22 to 25, and then 26 to 31 at the end is a true grab bag. But at every level, Mike, and most of us were having to go down a level almost every time we picked, you were graduating from one grab bag sort of down to another.
Exactly. It wasn't – you could see the different levels. Mm-hmm. There was a distinct change, I guess you could say.
Yes.
And you were able to tell, okay – and it's just like, okay, do I like this driver or do I like that driver? It's mm-hmm. just own personal preference, you know, because, you know, when it comes, especially when it comes to racing, people are like, yeah, I'm a Chevy guy.
Yep.
I'm a Ford guy. You know?
Yep.
You know, it may not be this particular driver, but he drives for my brand.
Yeah.
So, and that's what makes, you know, fantasy NASCAR a little interesting. Are you able to put those prejudices aside?
And you have to. Ultimately, you have to, and that's what makes it very interesting. It was fascinating to track. And, again, there is no better mind to analyze this, to break it down with, I say, pound for pound out there, than our FDH Motorsports editor, my good friend, Mike Petak. Mike, a pleasure, as always, to do this segment with you. Thank you so much, my friend. Great fun, as always. Looking forward to a great 2015.
Absolutely. Thank you. You care to give us a little prelim? Who's going to win the Daytona 500?
Daytona 500. In my extraordinarily unbiased opinion, one more for the road. I'll say Jeff Gordon.
There you go. and you can't go wrong with that. And, well, I might as well take the homework pick and say Joey Logano.
It could happen. Either way, it is possible, and they're both on that top tier, no question about it. We have Daytona right around the corner, and then from there, the rest of the 36-week season. Thank you, as always, Mike Petak.
Thank you.
Thank you all, everybody, for tuning in today to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.